And good morning. It is 8:19, and you're listening to Morning Edition on KASU. Joining me this morning is U.S. Representative Rick Crawford. And Mr. Crawford, thanks for joining us. Appreciate you.
You bet. Glad to be with you.
I know this is a time of year when Congress is on summer break, and you get a chance to come back into the area and that. So what do you do during this time when you're not in session, you get a little bit of time? What are you doing during your break?
First thing we did, we spent a week touring manufacturing centers in the, you know, some of the industry in the district. We went from basically from Stuttgart to Mountain Home to Paragould down into Mississippi County, you know, obviously Craighead County. What we did was we took a whole bunch of teachers with us to kind of get a feel for essentially the job market as it applies to STEM education and what employers are looking for from, you know, basic skill set that helps, you know, improve their access to good quality jobs. And a lot of this, gets back to just not knowing what's out there in the marketplace. So we can get our educators and our counselors involved. They can sort of see firsthand what some of the requirements are for a particular job, what the skill sets are that they're looking for, how they might steer a student, to prepare for a particular industry or a set of skills, then that's the whole point of it. And we got a lot of great feedback as a result, and spent a lot of time on the road because ASU was very gracious in providing transportation to get teachers around to the different locations. But it was a great experience, and, you know, we got good feedback, and we're planning on doing it again next year.
What were some of the things you picked up on that, boy? Some of the challenges that employers are facing right now that maybe some of the educators can help tackle?
Well, you know, there's some fundamental things that, you know, we tend to gloss over and sort of assume that people know, for example, how to read a tape measure. You know, and you think, well, that's fairly easy. No, if you haven't taught somebody how to do it, it's not fairly easy. And so, you know, it's a simple set of skills like that, some basic math, reading comprehension, things like that. And then you can get into some pretty higher level stuff where they're going to want, where, for example, in Jonesboro, Hytrol is really heavy in the engineering. They want to see, you know, real heavy math skills. We've had, we visited a medical facility, Baxter Medical, up in Mountain Home. They're using robotics, and so there's a pretty high degree of, you know, technical education required for some things like that. And, you know, and the thing about it is that this is also one of the things that I don't think a lot of our high school educators knew. But a company, for example, like Hytrol or Nucor Steel, they have actually partnered with local community colleges to help develop curriculum that fields that workforce, that educates the workforce and gets them ready to go to work, and hits the ground running at their given facility. So, you know, if you've got some specific training, for example, in robotics, they've actually helped develop the curriculum and even have gone as far as to be adjunct faculty to help develop the curriculum and instruct the students. So it's really kind of a win-win for everybody because not only does the student, you know, is he better prepared, but the employer is getting exactly the skill set training that they need, and it just works well for everybody.
And there are a lot of reports of people who say that there are a lot of jobs out there that just cannot be filled right now. But I mean, they're available, but they're not being filled.
Exactly, and you know that's the other thing that we hear about from employers is the soft skills, and that is, you know, fundamental things like, you know, coming to work, you know, showing up on time, being there, being on the job, putting the cell phone down, putting down the smartphone, and engaging in the work that you're paid to do, as opposed to, you know, the social things that we like to do in our spare time. That's a challenge, and it's one of the things that we discovered last year that we were hearing from not only from educators, but from our employers, that soft skills had really diminished. And most of the time, you can't teach soft skills. Those are learned generally in the house, in the home. And so we've got some issues there that we're trying to develop mentorship programs to help accelerate and enhance the soft skills that help a person perform well on the job.
You know, I know that you're in your break right now. You won't go back into session until probably after Labor Day, and then you'll adjourn probably at the end of September, won't return again until after the November elections. When you do go back, what are some of the things that you're going to be working on when you return September 6th?
Well, one of the biggest priority issues that we have in our office that we've been kind of leading on in Washington is the Cuba Trade Initiative for ag goods. And so we've got a committee hearing scheduled for the second week in September, I believe, a full committee hearing in the Ag Committee that will help us sort of refine the bill language. We've got to accommodate a lot of different people and make sure that we are being respectful of the considerations, the concerns that the folks in South Florida have, which has, you know, there's a large Cuban expat community in South Florida, so we want to be sensitive to their concerns. At the same time, recognizing the opportunity that exists for U.S. agriculture in being able to participate in a market that's so close to us that imports 80% of their food, it certainly could be a windfall almost immediately for Arkansas, but in a broader sense, it helps American agriculture from top to bottom. So we're looking at that, and I think we've got we're probably as close now to normalizing that as we have been in the last 15, 20 years.
U.S. Representative Rick Crawford joining us here on KASU. What's been that leading some of the resistance to this? You made a little bit of mention of people who live in South Florida who have been opposed to this, but kind of tell us why there's been still such resistance to opening up the Cuban market.
Well, what we're seeing is we're starting to see that resistance kind of fall by the wayside because the considerations that people have thrown up and have been valid concerns but have been entirely inconsistent with our policies. For example, you know, we hear individuals who are opposed, they'll talk about the human rights concerns. Well, we are concerned about human rights as well, and if we are, then we need to apply those considerations to countries like China and Vietnam and Venezuela and, Pakistan, Saudi Arabia, some of our trading partners that we don't hold them to the same standard. China is one of the most egregious violators of human rights on the planet, and yet we have normal trade relationship with them. They manipulate their currency. That's one of the things that they throw up about Cuba, is that Cuba manipulates their currency. Well, China does too, and they do it more egregiously than Cuba does. So there's that issue. Well, they're a communist regime. Yep, so is Vietnam, so is China. So, you know, what's the other concern? Well, when you start to tick these concerns off, you recognize that it's entirely inconsistent that we have the position that we do with Cuba regarding ag trade, but we're completely willing to look the other way with countries like Saudi Arabia, who last year beheaded more political prisoners than ISIS. So, you know, these are supposed to be our friends and our good partners. Pakistan, who, you know, they hanged over 300 political prisoners last year. And yet we do business with Pakistan. Not only do we do business with them, we pay them, in effect. And so, you know, there's some issues that are much bigger than Cuba that I think, in fairness, we need to consider. Otherwise, we need to bring Cuba into the same sort of consideration that we have for China, with China and Venezuela, another hostile regime. Venezuela has a pretty strong presence in the United States with their state-run oil company, Citgo. So, and yet they're perfectly welcome here in the United States. So why would we not consider trading with a nation that is so close to us? And then I think the byproduct of getting those ag goods, those food goods into Cuba, is that it's going to improve their economic picture there. And it's almost as, you know, thinking back in the mid-'80s when McDonald's moved into Moscow. Yeah, I think that was a big facilitator of some of the reforms that took place and ultimately led to the Soviet Union falling. And so I think it's realistic to think that we could play a role in filling a void in Cuba productively, positively, and advocate for change in a non-military, non-diplomatic way, but through an economic means that benefits everybody.
You recently released a video that detailed there may be a new path to opening up this Cuban market. Can you explain what that new path might be?
Yeah, what we did was we got together with folks in South Florida that had some concerns about it. We said, what do we need to do to address your concerns? Because the truth of the matter is we had an amendment to the Financial Services Appropriations Bill that would have lifted the credit restriction. I think we had the votes. I think they probably believed we had the votes as well. However, it would have been a short-term, at best, proposition. And it would also have been subject to being maintained in the conference process. And we don't know that it would have ever been signed into law. But we had the opportunity to collaborate with our friends from South Florida and got the commitment from them that if you can address our concerns, we'll support your bill. And we're there. We're at that point now. And that's the evidence of that is the hearing that we're going to have next month, that we have made the progress that we needed to get them to support it, recognize that what we're trying to do here is strictly agricultural, and we're not trying to validate or express any level of support at all for the current regime there, but we're strictly trying to sell U.S. agricultural goods in a manner that's consistent with every other country that we do business with. And that is, you know, I think that's resonated with them. They understood that I'm not trying to be a bull in a china shop here, just railroad through our initiative, but I do want to be concerned about what their sensibilities are, and so we've been able to work with them as opposed to them being opposed and creating an intra-party squabble. We've actually found an opportunity to collaborate effectively and cooperatively.
And how soon do you think that might open up?
Well, I think that we're going to have a good hearing in September, and ultimately that should lead the way for us to do something with this possibly in the lame duck session. But at the very least, what I think it does is it sets us up to move it pretty expeditiously in the next Congress. If we're not successful in the lame duck session, I think what we will have done is to lay the groundwork to pick this up, hit the ground running at the very early stages of the next Congress. But I'm really going to focus on trying to move this in the lame duck session as quickly as we can.
And with 60 seconds left, what will this mean for Arkansas agriculture when this gets done?
Well, it's probably going to, you're going from an $800 million market to a $1 billion market fairly quickly. And rice is a staple item, and chicken is a staple item. And those are things that Arkansas does very, very well. Arkansas, number one in rice, number two in chicken. And so Arkansas obviously is the state that probably stands to benefit the most initially. But you think about this also, knowing what I know about the agriculture in Cuba, they're relying pretty heavily on countries like New Zealand for their dairy products. Well, they're getting that in powdered form. The Florida dairy industry, I think, could very quickly benefit from that normalization. And when you start to see, dairy industry in Florida start to address the market in Cuba, that's going to open up more domestic market opportunity for dairy industry in other states. And so I think that's where people are at right now and why they see the value in this, that whenever you expand, market potential anywhere, it gives you more opportunity domestically as well as internationally, because it opens up more opportunities for commerce. So, I think we're getting pretty broad support on this, because it's a narrow focus on ag. It's an easy incremental step to make.
Congressman Crawford, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate you joining us.
You bet. Thank you.